You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL Podcast has misplaced its mirth.
Welcome to another edition of the Armerkin, the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined from a virtual room filled with some heroes, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Was it a Merkin? Was that what money said?
What did he say?
You didn't hear it. It said they misplaced their mirth. Like, you guys aren't funny anymore.
That's very different.
I don't know where you got Merkin, and for listeners out there, if you don't know what that is, just Google it.
Oh, you don't know how I got Merkin out of mirth? It's not that far off.
That's true.
But a merkin is, according to a Google search, an artificial covering of hair for the nether regions. It's used a lot in show business productions for certain scenes, and that's what I thought the bit was. So we are flying here on a Wednesday, hump day. Am I
Plus
right?
We know that's not true. Dan keeps his, you know, right by the desk.
That was a real fun peek behind the Hollywood curtains right there, Dan. Like a real stagehand.
this is where knowledge. Yeah, your wife being in the biz really paid off huge.
Everywhere you go in my house, you open up any drawer, you will find a merkin. That's just when you live in Los Angeles and you have a spouse that works in the entertainment business, merkins are literally everywhere you look.
That's
we use
life.
Them as handkerchiefs.
I was at your house last night for Emily's birthday, and actually I was playing with the boys, and I was like, oh, let's get a board game, and we opened up the drawer, and I was like, oh my God, merkins. What is that? And your four-year-old was like, oh, that's Daddy's merkin. And I was like, oh, okay.
It's normal to them. Greg and I, obviously not invited to Emily's birthday. There's a birthday we're seeing. What's
my gift
here?
To my wife for her birthday, for her 29th birthday, we'll call it that, was Erica. She came by for a visit.
Came by to babysit. I got to find out where you ate some dinner down there where you live.
Oh, we went to Mercado. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a place. Great Mexican restaurant. All right, we're in the weeds right off the bat. Big show, Wednesday show. Did I mention it's hump day?
Oh, yeah.
Merkin day and hump day. The rare Merkin hump day. And we have a new guest that's coming on a little bit later, a new member of the NFL Network family, Cameron Wolf, who is a reporter for us, and he does a lot of work down in Miami with the Dolphins, which is good because the Dolphins are an interesting team at this moment in time. He also has been over in Panthers camp, so we're going to have Cam on. I don't know if is Cam acceptable. We can ask.
I've heard him referred to as Cam, like on another.
And also another C Wolf with the same spelling of the last name. Colleen is a class act all the way, but you have to wonder if it annoys her just a little bit.
I mean, I saw her celebrating it. Like she was saying that it added to the C Wolves that she apparently knows other C Wolves. Maybe not at NFL
Be totally
Network,
honest.
But.
Be totally, Mark, because I know your answer. Greg, you be totally honest. If a Gary Rosenthal started working at NFL Network, would you be not mad or even annoyed, but just a little bit like, oh, I wish he had a different name?
If it was Gary, I want all the Garys I can in my life, so I would be all for that.
Gary is a great name.
I do like being confused for Ken Rosenthal occasionally on Twitter, you know, another diminutive man in sports media who's done very well, you know.
Baseball man.
You're basically Ken without the bow tie. That's how I know which one is which.
Mm. Without the bank account, I think.
Or maybe the airtime, the bank account. Yeah, yeah.
Coming up on today's show, I mentioned Cam Wolf. Also, yep, it's back. I got to tell you, our editor, Ali, we had a phone call the other day. I said, listen, load management, ever hear of it? He had me write a Hard Knocks preview. He had me drop an entire power rankings column. And last night, I'm up until 1 o'clock in the morning writing the Hard Knocks recap, the premiere of Dallas Cowboys season, 16th season of Hard Knocks. And I quite enjoyed the episode. I'd like to hear how much it annoyed Mark. So that's going to come up a little later in the show.
I'll save it.
Mark hates Hard Knocks.
Do not.
But before that, we love doing it. Greg, you know, this time of year, it's a great way to info dump and share some of our own analysis.
Ooh.
It's time for some training camp whispers. Mm. Let's go. Let's get it going. What are you hearing, Greg? Ear to the ground.
Where should I start? Let's go with the Ravens camp. I feel like the Ravens are quietly having an annoying camp for them. And, you know, started with Lamar, and it's continuing with a variety of injuries. Now, Rashad Bateman with a week-to-week injury that initially downplayed, and John Harbaugh, you know, confirmed on Wednesday that he might not be ready for the start of the season. So that is more than a week-to-week injury. He made sure to say it was going to be a while, and you just, like, look at all the different little pieces. It's the Ravens. They'll be better in November than they were in September, but it might be a team you want to catch early. Their offensive line, Zeitler's been out for most of camp too. Miles Boykin, their receiver, who was a starter last year, might not make the team right now. I just feel like there's a lot going on there, and Bateman was one of those rookie receivers that they needed to come in and make a big impact, because as you mentioned last week, Dan, like, Marquise Brown has not practiced at all. He's had a hamstring injury too, so you're basically counting on Sammy Watkins, and that's it.
And you have a Lamar who's deep into his scientific research on COVID. He's been down for the count again. It's just been kind of a little bit sloppy, huh?
Ronnie Stanley, they're, you know, arguably their best player along with Lamar, is just coming back to practice. People forget, you know, one of the highest paid left tackles in the league. I think he might be number one, and hasn't really practiced either because he's coming off that serious surgery that knocked him out of last season. So it's just like, there's a lot there. I really do think sometimes it's about when you play the team, and the Ravens, more than any team, them and the Patriots, I think, have a tendency to look a lot better at the end of the season than they do early.
And you know what? It's funny because doing the power rankings, and I wrote it over 2 days leading up to going up today, it is good in terms of an exercise keeping things in perspective, because I did think about all this with the Ravens, the way you just laid it out, but it wasn't enough for me to drop them out of the top five. I still say, okay, it's been a little bumpy, but am I going to say all of a sudden the Ravens are taking on water? No, it's just a little bit of a hiccup in their season preparation more than anything.
Greg calling it annoying is, it has been, there's been little bits of annoyances, which is not typical for the Ravens. But
Jimmy Smith is another guy that's out a couple of weeks who they're counting on to play snaps. It's a lot of them stacking up.
All right, how about you, Mark? Give us a whisper.
I've been focusing on Rams camp a little bit where, you know, I know when they lost Cam Akers, the thought was, I thought Cam Akers was someone that could lead, be a top three rusher in the league, if not have a chance to lead the league in rushing with the way that offense might look. But they lose him, obviously. And, you know, the problem was you have Daryl Henderson. I really like Daryl Henderson, but he's had durability issues. But Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic, 2 weeks in a row with her, you know, risers and fallers at camp, has listed all three of their running backs, Daryl Henderson, Xavier Jones, and Jake Funk, as guys who have they've all rotated in as first team and second team snaps. No one's taking the starting job away from Daryl Henderson, but even just today, Sean McVay listed Xavier Jones as someone who is going to have a big role in the offense. Jake Funk is sort of this analytics darling. I mean, I like the name, but yeah, actually I've had people reach out and say, like, this guy is going to grow on you the more you watch him. But he sounds like a little bit more of a special teams dabbler who will get some snaps at running back. But it just sounds like, obviously, this will drive fantasy heads to drink probably, but it will be a total committee scenario. But if you go back and look at what Daryl Henderson did in a couple early weeks last season where they leaned on him as the number one guy, he was electric against the Eagles and the Bills. And I just think that talking about him being explosive, looking healthy, which is key for him. That wasn't the case earlier in the offseason. So I think they're going to be okay on this front.
They just need that depth because, yeah, as you said, the other players behind him, there's really no one with any type of pedigree. And Henderson has had injury issues, and he wasn't really the guy at Memphis, even at college. So it's like, if he goes down or if he is not as good as they want him to be, you might find yourself getting into a little bit of an issue. I don't know. I still wouldn't be surprised if there's a veteran that shows up that everyone knows. And it won't be Todd Gurley, but I could see someone else popping into view here.
If they lost someone right now, I think they're like, he's basically, Sean McVay has said, we're riding with these guys. I mean, if there's some sort of hiccup, yes.
Funk, I mean, Mark loves the scrappy white running backs. Like, you know, Christian McCaffrey was right there for him a couple years ago. Really wasn't interested in that. McCaffrey was too good.
Because he was a first-round pick, though.
Right, he was too good. Right.
This is about the Zach Zenner All-Stars.
That's not scrappy, right.
You have to have a cool name, like Zach Zenner. What's his name? Jake Funk?
Toby Gerhart. That was really the original. I just like bringing that up.
Well,
I'm not worried about their running game, by the way. They're always kind of an underrated run blocking team. And that, I just think it's almost undersold how many weapons they have, even without Akers. The fact that Van Jefferson is out there, DeSean Jackson, I know it's DeSean Jackson, you know, practicing without pad season. He always looks good. But if he's their number four receiver and Tyler Higbee is like their number five as the tight end, like that is a loaded group. I'm not worried about their running game.
In other whispers, it's been an annoying, a little bit more than annoying. I would actually maybe flip the switch a little bit to alarming training camp overall for the Cincinnati Bengals. So the last thing they need in this uncertain time around Joe Burrow as he works his way back from that catastrophic knee injury is dispatches from the beat reporter saying that number five overall pick Ja'Marr Chase has, according to Paul Denner of The Athletic, has not shown as much separation as you'd hope in training camp. This is a player who opted out of his final year of college. He's 21 years old, so he's obviously rusty. And the hope here is that that's all this is, that some of his struggles in camp in terms of really standing out are all tied to his lack of play. And Cincinnati knew that was a possibility, I'm sure, when they drafted him. But at the same time, this is such a big pick for them. They took Chase because he was Joe Burrow's teammate in college, and they thought they would have an explosive 1-2 punch. They can't miss on this pick, and I'm not saying they're coming close to missing on the pick. We have no idea what's going on. But what you would like to hear things like you're hearing in Florham Park around Elijah Moore, the Jets draft pick, where it's like, oh, this guy's an instant playmaker. He might be a star in year one. You want to hear that from Chase, especially when you went wide receiver over protection for Burrow. So far, not the case. Not hitting the panic button, but when you factor in all these other issues around Cincinnati and their offense, I'd be concerned.
Because you have got to look at what they did in the draft as a whole, not just Chase. They chose not to take Sewell, like you said, and what they did, you know, to help their offensive line was take Jackson Carmen in the second round, which was a guy that had a lot of people split on, was surprised he took in the second round. He has struggled so much in his early snaps that he's been benched, supposedly, for like the fourth round pick, you know, so that already, like, that plan isn't going well. And who knows, the Bengals would argue, okay, we took three offensive linemen, like one in the second, fourth, and somewhere else. One of them hits, and maybe the fourth is hitting. But like, when you're hearing that the offensive line is struggling in Bengals camp again, and Joe Burrow is struggling too, it's just, they are probably the team I'm like less excited about than I was 2 weeks ago. And maybe it's irrational, but I don't care.
Well, I mean, Paul Denner has been writing one sort of you know, fatalistic report after the next. And it started with the Burrow scenario. And I do kind of wonder if they brought Burrow back a little too early. Just when you hear, like, Tyler Boyd, we mentioned this on our network show, Tyler Boyd saying that you could sort of see him favoring one leg, you know, limping a little bit. Like, that just seems to me, like, with the injury he had, it wasn't just, like, a clean ACL. It was much more than that. Like, that's a little tough, so.
How about some whispers?
I'm with you, Mark. I felt the same thing that...
What the f***?
Some organization...
It's just a waste of my time.
It's pretty rare to hear Mark swear.
Yeah,
it is a comprehensive waste of my day.
It's a manufactured joke.
I'm hearing
joke
boots on the ground. By the way, you know who? You know, Nick Wesseling. You know,
yeah.
Chris's brother.
Ricky's dying. She's loving
best
it.
Best man. His wife's been at Bengals camp multiple times and has given boots on the ground reports about Burrow's struggles. They're worried.
Really?
Well, that's multiple.
Good. And it is. It's funny you mentioned Nick, because I thought about Chris, and you and I, Greg, had conversations early in April when the Reds got off to a hot start, and how bittersweet it would be if the Reds finally pulled it all together and Wes wasn't around to see it, at least on this earthly plane. I don't know. But the Cincinnati Bengals, for years, I try to say, Wes, come back to the Bengals. Go into their loving arms. They're waiting for you to come home. We know you built the file. It was a thick... I wonder where that is right now. It's somewhere. Somewhere in Lakeisha and Wes's house right now. There's that thick file, that the dossier that Chris prepared as only Chris could, with utter focus on all the reasons why he was divorcing this team. This was, what, 15 years ago now, maybe more. More
I thought Burrow might bring him back in. He was
and
into Burrow
was the guy. I remember like draft day being like, and Chris was excited about Burrow, just like everybody else. And like, this is the guy to do it. And I worry that is Cincinnati on the right track here. And to your point, Mark, the same thing went through my mind, and I did write about it in the power rankings, is are they having the right conversations in that building right now? Because it is a conversation that should be had. Are we pushing too fast on this quarterback to have him ready for week one as opposed to when he's truly ready to compete again? He's struggling with the mental side of things. We've heard that. It's been dispatched. He's spoken about it. Something to keep an eye on.
Well, there's just no, like, well, where is our grounded trust in ownership, in coaching? I mean, that report or that file that Wesseling had was like two Warren commissions stacked on top of each other. And there was a lot of evidence for him to lean on. I don't think he was about to come back anytime soon.
No, I don't think he was. All right, Greg, you're up.
Let's go to Green Bay. Because I don't think it's been talked about enough that David Bakhtiari, you know, the best left tackle in football, I think is trending towards not playing week one, you know, protecting Aaron Rodgers. There's a chance he could go on the PUP list. Sounds more likely maybe they'll keep him off of it and hope that he returns early in the season. But that's a big deal for an offensive line that also lost their center, Corey Linsley, to the Chargers. And yet I'm not that worried about it because they've been playing Elgton Jenkins at left tackle. He's a third-year player who's played everywhere. And I'm at the point where I just think Elgton Jenkins can like make all the money in the world by playing left tackle. Who else has played guard, center, and then if he does it at left tackle at like a Pro Bowl level in the first 3 years of his career? He's sneaky been one of the best draft picks. Gutekunst is kind of stacked, you know, quietly stacked up some pretty good draft picks. His first one is Jaire Alexander, an all-pro. Jenkins, if he steps in at left tackle, no one's going to make more money than him. Reportedly, the whispers are just that he's shutting down the Packers' pass rush, that he looks totally natural out there, and that they're not as concerned about the whole left tackle situation.
It was a couple weeks ago that Matt LaFleur had a comment about the Green Bay's line, saying it was sort of as deep as any line he'd really ever been around, that there are a lot of valuable moving pieces there.
And they're starting a rookie at center. They're just going to draft Josh Myers, play him right away, even though he's not like a first-round pick or anything, and they sound pretty confident. LaFleur just seems confident in general, taking shots at Arthur Smith earlier today. I don't know if you saw that, Dan.
Smith took one right back, though.
Well, yeah, Smith started it, said he doesn't
Let's hear it. Let's listen.
I don't think I'm sweet and awesome. You know, I don't spend an hour like Matt LaFleur does looking in the mirror before he runs out there. So you can tell Matt I said
that. What did LaFleur say in retort?
Well, I'm honored that he would think of me, first of all. But you know, Arthur and I did share a locker room together in Tennessee. So, yeah, I might have been looking in the mirror, getting my clothes right while he was trying to get his hair right with that Just for Men. You know, you guys know he's younger than me, right?
Ooh, that's spicy.
You could tell Matt LaFleur like prepared that, and that's Arthur Smith went back again, and he was glad. He was like, "I'm glad, you know, Matt spent like another day preparing that joke to come back at me." It does feel like if I'm in the locker room in Tennessee, and that's where they were teammates, I guess, you know, colleagues on the same staff with the Titans, like I'm taking Arthur Smith kind of in a jab back and forth. It feels like LaFleur is not going to be as quick.
Not the first like coach, because we don't know him that well, that I would have predicted to come out with such a burning arrow that goes right through Matt LaFleur. I mean, it was a pretty nice jab by Smith.
Yeah, but nothing.
Keith Hanzus.
I was going to say nothing cuts as deep as Keith Hanzus casually tossing off. He looks like a bearded boy. Hey, Danny, I like this LaFleur guy, but kind of looks like a bearded boy, doesn't he?
I wanted to talk some Packers because I do feel like all we did was talk about Aaron Rodgers' psychodrama all offseason.
Yeah, that's
not, very little focus on the football of it all. So I was like looking for some sort of good Packers nug.
That ain't our fault.
Good nug. Good nug. And yeah, I refuse. I don't want to go back down this road because I know it's very unpopular in the public forum to say anything critical of Aaron Rodgers and his role and what happened over the summer. Public opinion was very much in your favor, Greg, over Aaron Rodgers.
Yo, you guys are hearing the, you know, Mark and you have been hearing the chirping too much.
Apparently,
last time you were worried about it.
I don't mind the chirping. It's okay to be aware of what's around you as well, Greg. And I'm just saying, like, that's fine. If everyone thinks Aaron Rodgers is a god and there's nothing he could do that is wrong and everything that the management does is wrong, that is what it is. But can we at least allow that Brian Gutekunst, the guy that Rodgers has been trying to get fired for 6 months, has actually done a lot to help Aaron Rodgers, whether he sees it or not, in his time at the helm? Or will we at least allow that?
No,
or
we can't. We will not allow it. The subreddit will not allow
number
it.
One?
It was like 98% to 2%. Like, Greg is so smart. Dan and Mark don't know what they're doing.
I'm getting like, daily things about this. You got to tune these clowns out. You got to tune them out.
No,
well,
I think
this was weeks ago, but it was a shocking response to what I thought was a two-sided conversation.
You're absolutely right. By the way, Gutekunst, here's what he did to start. He fired Mike McCarthy. We'll get to Hard Knocks later, but I think... Goody. The first decisions he's made have all been great. Drafting Jair with his first pick. Hiring Matt LaFleur, that's worked out great. Like, back-to-back 13-win seasons. You're right. You're absolutely
right.
Let's
fire him, though, because we decided to not keep Jake Kumerow or whoever the Rodgers was on about. I don't know. But, no, we're wrong, Mark.
Well, no, clearly.
Who's up? Mark?
It's me. I'm going to go to Jacksonville. Number one, I want to talk about the Jaguars because I cannot think of a team that has been to me more blasé and passable and don't need to watch them for years on end. But now I cannot wait to see even their preseason games to see what's going on here because it's a completely, to me, I think the offense under Urban Meyer has a chance to be productive right away. I mean, number one, Gardner Minshew has put in a bad position the past couple of years. But you look at the talent on the offense right now. It starts with Trevor Lawrence, obviously. If he is if he becomes as advertised, everything changes. Marvin Jones, DJ Chark, I know he's going through something right now. Laviska Shenault, who I think is going to be great. Those are solid wideouts, better than some of the wideout rooms around the league. James Robinson, obviously, last year. Rookie Travis Etienne, who has been described as, you know, moving all over the field and totally uncoverable as a running back catching passes out of the backfield. I think they're going to be one of the most run-heavy teams in the league. And I kind of just can't wait to see it because it's the Urban Meyer factor, too. These things, sometimes they work out. Sometimes they're total disasters. If you're a college coach that figures out, I don't want to do this NFL thing. But he has said over and over, this is not a four-year rebuilding plan. We are here to win right now. And inside that division, I'm not saying that they're a playoff team at all. There are a lot of issues and some weaknesses there, but I would not be surprised to see them go from one win to like 7 or 8. I really have a feeling that they're going to be one of the bigger stories of the year.
Well, as the Texans have devolved into farce and the Colts having all their issues, of course, and even the Titans now adjusting to life without their play caller, the AFC South really needed some juice. And yeah, I think that that's what Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer provide. I could see that. I mean, it really does. A lot of it goes back to Lawrence, not to oversimplify right. it, but if he is as special as people say, they are going to make a leap. And they lost 15 straight games to end last season, and they went in the tank. So it's going to be hard not to be better, but how much better will be interesting to see.
When you look at Andrew Luck's first season, they became a playoff team after being a complete disaster the year before. It's not impossible. There's a lot of money in the offensive line. I don't know if it's a great offensive line.
I don't think it's great. They drafted Walker Little, who's my son's new favorite player. Just like saw his name on the draft and has been asking about him. I'm like, yeah. And is reportedly looking good good in Jaguars camp over there. But I do wonder about like the Urban Meyer bringing some of the college stuff to him. I'm fascinated by this thing he's been doing in practice where it's like they have this winners and losers session. And like they have an announcement. It's like Robinson versus Jack, and then like the you know they have the matchup and they declare a winner and a loser after each one, and they keep track of it. And Urban Meyer was like, well, this is too important, these are like people's livelihoods, I want to keep track. And like that he's saying that the wins and losses metric, as you know, as he was referring to the data, will inform him in terms of like who makes the team and the depth charts and all this. And it's like it's a big rah-rah college thing every day at Jaguars camp. Makes it sounds like it'd be fun camp to go to and watch at least.
Whispers. Listen, I'm not going to panic about Zach Wilson. I have a different outlook on the Jets quarterback situation than I've had in the past. Certainly different than Sam Darnold, who I was all in and on and truly believed in, and it didn't work out. I don't know about Wilson. We'll see. I've always been kind of, I wouldn't say on the fence about Zach Wilson, but it just felt like a gamble when it happened, and maybe he'll turn into a superstar and be the Mormon Mahomes, but I'm fully prepared, put it that way, for this to go the other direction. Yeah. With that in mind, he has not played well in recent practices, and it started with the green and white scrimmage, which they hold every year. Well, they didn't last year, but last year didn't happen. You hear me? It never happened. Where they have 20,000 people in MetLife Stadium, and Wilson struggled mightily through that scrimmage, 11 of 24, 112 yards, two picks. And then he took those struggles into practice as the week went on, and he's been having some issues, and a lot of this ties back to where they're at in the install of the offense, which they're completing now. And once they started live play calling in the seventh practice, Wilson went from being this really bright spot in camp to all of a sudden he's struggling. And my overall takeaway, and this is maybe a message to fellow Jets fans that are listening right now, is like, just chill out. Don't freak out. This doesn't mean that Wilson is a bust. But it does remind you also that there's going to be a learning curve here. Hopefully there's more highs than lows. But the idea that Zach Wilson at 22 years old coming out of that program at BYU against that level of competition was ever going to step right in and be a dominant force in the NFL, there's going to be some really bad days. And I'm prepared for that. And the hope is that there will be good days as well. So once he gets more comfortable, the install is complete, he gets more into the vibe of things, hopefully he's making progress heading into week one. My concern here is if he kind of falls into some mental funk here in addition to the physical, and he's trying to overthink, the Jets don't have a plan B here. And he can potentially go into week one in a not a great place mentally and preparation wise, and then things can snowball. And you know the New York media is going to be all over that if that happens. So keep an eye on the situation. Hopefully next time this week there will be reports that he's bounced back, but this has not been a good week for the number two overall pick.
I mean, we also live in insane times where first round quarterbacks, because this has happened a few times, are expected to come in and look like the world savior right away. I mean, it just seems so natural that he'd go through some ups and downs. It's probably a tough offense to learn, but the Shanahan offense is also great for quarterbacks. The one thing that you mentioned, because this is where you kind of lose some of these guys, and I think it happened to Darnold to some degree. I can think of a billion Browns quarterbacks that it happened to all around the league too, where if that first season, they don't have someone they can kind of put in to give him a pause, if he needs a week just to regroup, if he's got to go in there, there's good things that can happen for 17 games battle-tested, but also it could just shake you for years to come. And I think this Jets regime, though, you don't see that happening. If it were the past one or the past 25, I'd be concerned.
And I think that's on the quarterback. Like, if the quarterback's going to be a good pro, I think they can shake that stuff off. Alex Smith, Eli Manning, two of the worst rookie quarterbacks I've ever seen. It shook it off. I think had the careers that they were destined to have. I do think Zach Wilson will be supported by a much better offensive line, could be very good, pretty good weapons around him, and in a potentially good defense. I do look at that schedule, though. You're right, Dan. All the other rookie quarterbacks have, you know, someone they're competing with, or even in Lawrence's case, not that Lawrence isn't going to play every game, but like, you know, a quality backup. And the Jets, you know, have James White or James Morgan. They might want to look into that. And they might. And they play the Patriots and the Broncos weeks 2 and 3. So those are two defenses that will be ready to send a lot at Zach Wilson and see how he responds to
You know, and I was saying that, you know, 2 months ago, that it felt a little off to me that they have not built in any security blanket behind him. But I think a big part of that goes back to an overall organizational above the treetops viewpoint, to use some corpo jargon, that this is the new era of the Jets, and it's going to be with the new head coach and the GM who's fully in control, and this young quarterback who was picked by the people that are in the building. But maybe it's better to have a little nuance to your organizational game plan. Do you want to go around one more time?
Sure. Ooh, yeah. I got a lot. What should I go with? I think how about Patrick Robinson retiring with the Saints? I don't know if this is a whisper as much as a transaction. But I think if you want to put the Saints' changes on defense in perspective, they cut this guy Ken Crawley a few years ago because they were so deep at cornerback that they didn't need him anymore. He had killed them in multiple situations in the playoffs and all this stuff. Patrick Robinson at that time was probably like their fourth or fifth cornerback. They came into this training camp with Patrick Robinson starting, basically, on the outside, which he hadn't done and played a full season in like almost 9 years. Then he retires halfway through camp. Michael Thomas isn't returning their calls. Onyemata is suspended. Suddenly, Crawley, the guy that was like seventh on the depth chart just a year or two ago, is number two now. They're playing their young kid, Adebo, I think, at linebacker, some too, who we thought, wait, he would play cornerback. It's like, I don't know, man. There's some weird stuff going on in New Orleans, and they are counting on Marquez Callaway.
I know the way Mark talks about England, you talk about New Orleans as your true home.
I love the city, and yeah. I think Jameis Winston is a better player than people give him credit for. But I think the downside of this team is quite low. It's last place.
Total team in transition material. I mean, I you know, they've been through so much, but if they won 7 games, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, how about this?
A starter retired in the middle of camp at their worst position, too, and it's just like things like this, just weird things keep happening. I keep thinking back to that year where Sean Payton was suspended for the year, and they had poster of Sean Payton looming over all their practices. I don't know why, but I just keep thinking of that.
My favorite. It's one of my favorite stupid football things of all time. It's like, listen, we got jobbed and they stole our coach from us, but we know how to straighten this out. Let's build a mural of like the dictator of North Korea and put it up in the practice with giant lettering that says "Do your job."
Foot flag that was hanging over everything.
It's not even their moniker.
It was crazy. It really was like a North Korea thing. That's well
but you,
put.
You can. I think we could all see them if the wheels fall off, going 6-11 this year.
Yeah.
Does anybody here see them going 11-6?
I think if like a million things went right, Sean Payton's pulled some magic out over the years, that like it, I don't think you can totally take it off the table, but it seems pretty darn very unlikely.
They could have wins inflated if, like, for instance, the Falcons never got started and the Panthers and Sam Darnold totally crumble as a duo.
They like what they're getting from Cesar Ruiz, who was their first round pick last year, who's now at guard. If he was good, their offensive line might be I would probably be my pick as the number one offensive line in football. So that is something that doesn't tend to get mentioned, and they could be incredible up front.
And they, you know, since they had that huge draft class, I believe it was 2017, they've been, you know, money in the bank as a double digit team, a true playoff Super Bowl contender. They made deep runs in the playoffs. They got ripped off on a Super Bowl bid by that Nickel Robey Coleman play. And it makes you think, oh, they're like the Patriots. Like they've gone 10-6 or 11-5 or 12-4 every year for the past 18 years. So they'll figure it out. But no, they actually, before that big draft, they went 7-9 3 years in a row. So it's not right. Like, and people are talking to Sean Payton's job safe and all this other stuff. He's going to the Cowboys. Like, so it's not inconceivable that the Saints could take a step back under Sean Payton. It's happened before.
They feel like the 2020 Patriots, except now yeah, it'll be 7-10, except instead of 7-9.
Mark.
All right. A little off the field nugget from the Chargers, who I think one of the things about the Chargers that was kind of put on ice last year was with no fans, we don't have to worry about, you know, the optics of the Chargers having 7,000 people in their stadium and 80,000 Raiders fans. And so now it's like, where are we with that? And I read this little nugget this morning that the Chargers actually, they, according to the team, they have blown past the average season ticket sales from their final 20 years in San Diego. The number right now, that number averaged back then about 45,000. It is well beyond that, they say, at this point, at least, you know, tangibly beyond it. And that means that, you know, from a visual sense, it's not going to be as bad as we thought. This was just always on my radar because I never thought that LA should have two football teams. And had this been a total disaster, it would be a huge talking point. The NFL wants nothing to do with that. And, you know, you're still probably going to get 20, 30,000 fans from the other team, which happened to them in San Diego, but it doesn't sound like a white hot disaster.
I'm glad you brought this up because I saw this last week and I had the same initial reaction as you. I mean, they're not out of the woods yet because, first of all, this is a very fickle town. I mean, the Lakers are always going to draw. The Dodgers always draw extremely well. The Kings have a really fervent fan base, and you could point, and then of course the college teams, USC, UCLA. I mean, it is a really good sports town, but you can get lost in the shuffle. And if the Chargers get off to a bad start, all those people that bought season tickets, well, what are they going to do? They're going to turn around and say, I'm not going to go see these guys. I'm not going to spend the money and, you know, pay $80 to park at the new stadium and then watch them lose in the last minute. I'm going to sell this to some insane Steelers fan and make a profit. So I don't think they're out of the woods, but it is promising. I mean, it feels like, I don't know. I haven't met anybody yet. I don't have a lot of Charger fans in the Los Angeles area that I've interacted yet with, but this data tells us that they're out there.
I know one.
I know one. Guy I met at the bar when we watched the soccer match.
A friend of, yeah, dad of a one of my kids' friends. I think they would not wish the pandemic on anyone, but if any teams sort of benefited from the pandemic in any way, it was them, you know, avoiding last season, that which would have been awkward. I don't think there was much buildup, but then suddenly you have Herbert, who's one of the most exciting young quarterbacks in the league. And I think we've seen at a lot of sporting events in the U.S., the pent-up demand to just be back among people and root on live sports is different than it was before. I'm seeing this across sports. It's not just the NFL, and I'm sure the NFL is going to get a little bit of a boost from that, assuming, you know, things don't get totally dark in the coming weeks.
And you could see the Chargers being a team, because they are buzzier because of what happened last year, where you get, like, the guy, the dad that moved to L.A., and like he was let's say a Dolphins fan or a Jets fan or something, probably not Jets, they're too loyal. They move to LA, they reboot all their loyalties and like bring their kids in because they want their kids to watch football live, and they all become Chargers fans. I mean, it's like the Rams, or by the way, don't have the roots they claim to in this city either right now. I mean, it was 25 Ouch. Years ago. They don't. Whoa. I mean, I think they're both.
You knew the dagger
both,
was coming. Say that to
I'm
just saying
Birch,
the Chargers
say that
were
to Birch. Yikes.
The Chargers Q rating was so low. A year ago at this time, I think it's vastly changed, and I think you're going to get people curious about that team if they stay hot.
Herbert was a godsend, and we'll see if he continues on his trajectory. I'm going to do a quick double banger out of the NFC East. And NJ Advanced Media's Mike K reported that Jalen Hurts has, quote, heavily targeted Dallas Goedert. Of course, he's a tight end on the rise, but also Zach Ertz. In training camp, you remember Zach Ertz, the Super Bowl hero. He'll never have to buy another meal in insert city here. Like, Ertz is in that club. His game-winning touchdown catch against the Patriots. And I just thought that was interesting after an offseason of speculation that Ertz would be leaving town. And maybe he still will. They could still trade Ertz, hypothetically, before the season starts. But the fact that he's having a good camp does add a little bit more credence to the idea that, okay, he's still just 30 years old. Maybe he was just banged up last year. Maybe he's still a player. And the fact that Jalen Hurts threw to his tight ends a third of the time in his playing time last year, maybe it's a good idea to have two tight ends that can play the guitar. And then over in Dallas, and we'll get to them more thoroughly with Hard Knocks, but I just want to mention here that Michael Gallup According to the Dallas Morning News, is seeing more work in the slot, which I like because Michael Gallup, it's almost like I don't know if the Cowboys know what to do with him, and he's such a great talent, and it seems like they just say, go run deep, and every once in a while we'll throw it your way. If maybe you could carve out a more nuanced niche to him in the game plan, I think he could be a real stud receiver. He's, I think, one of the more underrated wideouts in the NFC.
They're going to be so hard to cover because if Cooper is healthy, I can't think of a trio in the NFL that can all do everything like those three. They're all diverse, especially if Gallup is moving outside. He probably would be the one of the three that, you know, you think he has mostly one trick, which is going deep down the field. He's a great boundary guy. But the three, I mean, CeeDee Lamb can do everything. Amari Cooper can do everything. You got Gallup cross training. Like, good luck trying to come up with a defense to stop that.
And by the way, they did it. We saw them do it for the first month of the season before Dak Prescott went down. I mean, he was on route to an MVP type season.
And if you'll allow me, just because I think it's very important, given the status of the world right now, Tampa Bay Buccaneers running back Leonard Fournette, who told reporters a couple weeks back that he wanted to learn more about the vaccine. He has now updated his stance. He said, we're almost there. So Dr. Fournette is almost there in the research and
deep research,
the digging on the vaccine. And this podcast will keep you up to date on Fournette's research and when it's completed.
The numbers have skyrocketed. 91% of the league.
We're close.
91% of the league has gotten at least the first jab. That's pretty high. I mean, it was like 50 on June 15th.
Right.
We're almost there.
We're almost there.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Good whispers.
I was like, do I have a speed round whispers? Or
did you want to throw one in there? I don't want to.
No, let's go. Let's go. Is Cam Wolf here? Let's talk to Cam.
Let's welcome him in. He is, of course, the newcomer at NFL Network, a reporter, and hopefully the hazing hasn't been too rough. I know he did some work with Rap Sheet and, you know, Rappaport. He could be real rough on the newbie. So hopefully we'll check in on that. How is the great Cameron Wolf, who's been doing a lot of work for us at the network? First of all, welcome aboard. And has Rap Sheet been cool, or was he a jerk? Be honest.
He was good, man. I can't complain. I was preparing for everything. They were telling me it was going to be hazing. I was prepared to have to carry his mic and do all kinds of rookie hazing. But he was actually pretty good. You know, I don't know if he was just trying to sugar me up the first day, but you know, he's letting me take lead on air, and, you know, not tripping over me and all types of things. So he gave me a good welcome.
Cool, man. Well, welcome aboard. And I know you're based in Florida and you're doing a lot of Dolphins coverage for us. You've also done some Panthers coverage. But let's start with the Miami football team. And they got the deal done with Xavien Howard. I imagine that was a huge relief for the entire organization. And it allows them to kind of move forward. What is the vibe around the team post Xavien drama?
Man, that was a big weight off of everyone's shoulders, especially if you're a Dolphins fan. You know, Xavien Howard is the best player on that team. I don't think there's really any question. And, you know, they've already seen this happen two or three times over the last few years. You know, Minkah Fitzpatrick gets traded, Laramie Tunsil gets traded. It's like, man, we can't trade our best player every year, can we? So I think, you know, early in the offseason, he had requested a trade. He wanted this new deal. But the reality was he never truly wanted to trade. He just wanted the respect that comes with money. And, you know, he didn't feel that. So I think that there is a lot of ease of tension over the last three or four days with him being sort of satisfied. I don't know if it's fully finished. I think maybe if he has another great year, we revisit this next offseason. But at least for now, for 2021, it seems like everyone's on the same page. The way Brian Flores' defense is, they need man-to-man shutdown corners. And Xavien Howard is one of the best in the league. So I think that helps everyone. The team, his teammates love him. And it's a lot easier when you don't have to tiptoe around questions about why X isn't here. You know, try to pick sides on whether you're with the team or you're with X. So that was their biggest maybe hurdle coming into camp. And it seems like they've overcome it.
Yeah, are you wearing like a self-branded shirt? Maybe that's why Rap Sheet didn't give you any of the business. Like if you yeah, come in, that's a power move. Like I'm at the new company. What does your shirt say? The Wolf Pack.
The Wolf
Pack. So you're like another Steve Wolf. You're like yeah, Colleen is, yeah. You know, a regular on this show. That's another Steve Wolf. Any like tension there? Like what's going on between you two?
Greg, right now? Please.
Oh, no. Oh no, that's no. We're a Wolf Pack. We're a family. You know, of course, she's the highest ranking Sea Wolf in the Wolf Pack. You know, I'm just a new cub, but we wolves we stick together. So it's gonna be a stronger. As you guys know, when Wolf Packs are together, they're stronger in pairs than they are as singles. So me and Colleen have already talked. You know, you guys are not gonna hear the last of this Wolf Brandon. We're gonna hit this.
No, I'm
until
impressed.
They tell us we gotta stop.
I like putting the worst kids in their own names too. I think it's a strong move.
This is the worst podcast, by the way. It's just like all our questions to our Dolphins and Panthers reporter right now are just like, do you hate this new guy you work with? Do you hate this new person? Are they nice to you? Are they mean to you? Mark, get us on track.
I have something about the Dolphins that on our show I've raised many times as just a concern. I just want to know how it's going to work. You've got two offensive coordinators, Eric Studsville, George Godsey. And, you know, and I'm hearing that the offense has changed a lot. Miles Gaskin had comments saying, you know, it's going to look real different, more motion. There's more deep passing. It's more flexible. I mean, what is it going to look like? And can you just tell me, how did these two guys work together? And like, who gets the blame if like the offense crumbles? And like, who do fans decide to point fingers at? Just feels a little bit atypical to me.
Is there a Batman and a Robin in this mix? How is it truly going to break down here, Kim?
Yeah, I think they're going to thumb wrestle every game so you can call plays. And the winner is going to be able to call. No, I'm just kidding. They've defined the roles. I think what helps is that, you know, George Godsey coming from more of a pass background. Eric Studsville is coming from more of a run background. So although they don't have pass game coordinator or run game coordinators, you can kind of look at it as maybe something of that elk. We've seen that in the past with teams who've had head coaches that are offensive coordinators, quote unquote. They'll have run game coordinators, they'll have offensive coordinators. So I think that they'll collaborate, but I think you'll see them fall a lot in their lane. You know, George Godsey will probably have the heavier hand on the passing games. He's worked with quarterbacks in the past. He spent all of last season, the second half of last season, working with Tua, being the guy who's directly in his ear. So I'd anticipate that George Godsey would have a lot more contact in the quarterback room and in the passing game, where Eric, he's been a running back coach his whole career, so he's going to be having a lot more impact in the running game as with the offensive line and the protection. So they haven't, quote-unquote, named the play caller. I have an idea of who I believe the play caller will be, but I can't confirm that yet, so I'm going to be a good reporter and just kind of let it free for now. Yeah, sit on it until I can get it confirmed. But I know they know who the guy is. There's going to be one play caller. There's not going to be, you know, a back and forth where, hey, but I think that what helps them, and we saw it last week because George Godsey tested positive for COVID and he was out for a week. You have two instead of one. So in this COVID era, it probably helps you just in case something happens that another guy can step in. And also it
doubles.
Helps
you. Good to have doubles.
Yeah. He got doubles. And it helps with a little versatility, right? Because, you know, right. you're playing, your game plan against the Patriots 1 week, you want to run the ball 40 times. It's probably going to be an Eric Studisville game plan. You know, and then you're playing Kansas City and you got to keep up with Patrick Mahomes. You know, you're probably going to have a Jordan Gatsy-led game plan. So I think that's probably how it's envisioned. But to kind of jump off what you were talking about earlier, it is going to be different from what I've heard. The three words I've heard have been flexibility, motion, and deep balls, which are three things that are pretty simple to us. But if you watch the Dolphins' offense last year, they're able to all three of those things. So that's probably a good way to start for them to try to get this, get Tua and the offense in a better situation.
I'm sort of done doubting them. Like, you were there for the fish tank season, as we dubbed it a couple years ago, and they ended up being way more competitive than anyone thought. I went into last season thinking they were like a bottom five roster just in terms of talent. And then if you actually look at the big free agent money that they spent, most of it went terribly. And yet somehow they show up on Sundays and they're like dynamic, and there's something there that seems like it's greater than the sum of their parts. You've been there for the Brian Flores era. I guess just from your perspective, like, what is that? Because I think they've really overachieved back-to-back years, and I have doubts about them again this year. Yet now, having learned from the last couple of years, I'm kind of done doubting them and figuring that they'll look a little better than they do on paper.
Must be something in the fish tank, to use your word. But I think that when you look at all of it, it's got to start with the head coach, you know, and I think that they made a good hire in Brian Flores. I think he's a guy a lot of people were afraid when you hire these Patriot assistants, who are they going to be? Are they going to be copycats for Bill Belichick? And so far, he's been his own guy, and I think he's earned a lot of respect, and I think he's maximized those teams. That year, 2019, that first month and a half of that year was miserable. Mm. I'm walking in the locker room, and guys are just, you know, it's somber. It felt like somebody, a funeral, you walk in there every Sunday, and there was so much turnover that I had guys asking me, you know, where's the restroom? Where how do I go? They just showed up on a Saturday and they got to play, you know, playing in respect. So it was a lot of stuff going on. But I remember halfway through that year, that was a big focus point for them when I think Ryan Fitzpatrick came in that game. And I think Brian Flores earned a lot of respect, and that team sort of earned respect that, hey, we can be better than our talent says. So on paper this year, I think they're an average team. Like you said, I think on paper, you look at them, you know, maybe a playoff team, maybe, you know, maybe 7-10, 8-9, however you want to kind of rank them. But I think that they have a little bit of magic in this defense, and particularly how they've schemed this defense up. And really, it's all on Tua. Tua plays better than he did last year, which, you know, obviously is a low bar. Then I think there's no reason why they can't push for the playoffs, one of those wild card spots in the AFC.
Man, if the Dolphins go in a positive direction this year and the Patriots improve, and we know what the Bills are, that's going to be a really interesting division, especially if the Jets are also competitive, at least. Before you go, Cam, you were also at Panthers camp, and I wrote a little about this recently, and I saw you reported it on as well. You when you take a step back and you look at the Carolina offense, it's actually, you don't have to squint to see it as a unit that can move and score points and make them potentially dangerous. What were you seeing when you were boots on the ground there?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fantasy football guy. So you start looking at their roster and you start seeing some names. You know, Christian McCaffrey, if he's healthy, top three, top five back in the league. You know, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, both of those guys had 1,000 yards last year. You know, and you bring in Sam Darnold, and he's a question mark, right? You know, he's the Tua, quote unquote, of this offense, where we just don't know what we're going to get. And their big thing for him is kind of what we were talking about. You have weapons. You don't have to be Superman. You don't have to, you know, throw all these interceptions that you threw with the Jets. You know, a dump off isn't to Christian McCaffrey. Is it check down Charlie? It might be a touchdown, you know? So I think they're trying, and I don't know if they're going to be effective or not. I can't sit here and tell you that the Sam Darnold experiment is going to work, but I think their focus is, let's simplify things for them. Let's maybe hope that he can have a Ryan Tannehill type turnaround where we put him in a system with Joe Brady. We make things, you know, from what I heard, the Jets kind of threw the book at him and said, hey, learn. So maybe they simplify things. Maybe they tell him to focus on your weapons. They've got a good defensive front. There's no reason why they can't be the second best team in that division, in my opinion.
Ooh, Mark is loving this. He's on Matt Rhule corner. He hasn't left. He's loving it.
I dig Matt Rhule.
Very good. Cam, again, welcome aboard. It's great to have you, and best of luck in your maiden voyage here with NFL Network, and I'm sure we'll be in touch down the line.
We got to get both Wolves on at the same time.
Let's like, do it.
No, that's their thing.
Let's do it.
That's their thing.
Seems
we don't want to infringe on their IP, but that's up to them ultimately.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we'll get something together, but appreciate y'all. It was fun. What to do to be.
All right, man.
Thank you. Thanks, Cam. Later.
There he goes. Cam Wolf. Actually, I never asked him if he's okay with Cam, but Cameron Wolf there.
Didn't seem not okay.
Dan Arnold was another guy that's getting some pop, a little abbreviated whisper here, the tight end that the Panthers brought in. But it all goes back, and you gave, I think, Darnold a negative 47.3 mark, Greg, in our division power ranking segment. So if Darnold can't play the guitar, none of this matters. But
they're hoping for the post-Gase bump, basically.
Right.
The Tannehill post-Gase bump. We'll see.
That's exactly right.
I will say, though, there have been some very clunky Sam Darnold to Dan Arnold tweets. It's just like the most predictable, flurry of like kind of clunky wordplay stuff going on out on Twitter. Dan Arnold is, I think, an interesting player, but the way the tweets have come out to me is ponderous.
Is it because Darnold and Arnold is simply in the same sentence, or are people
exactly
having fun with it?
No, oh, okay. No, they're both things. Both things. Yes.
All right, everybody out there, you heard Mark. Clean it up. Get that merkin out of there, not the mirth. All right, before we go, and this is a spoiler alert now to all the UK listeners and in other international territories that haven't had access yet to the Hard Knocks premiere. I did connect with Handsome Hank, our UK ambassador, and all things here at NFL Media. He said that Hard Knocks will be up and in your screens Thursday afternoon or Thursday night on the Game Pass app, and I believe Sky Sports will also be airing it on Thursday or Friday, so check that out. As for the rest of you, let's dig into it. The premiere, Tuesday night, Dallas Cowboys, and I'll start here. The Cowboys, yes, it has been a 25-year drought, 26, actually, since they've been to the Super Bowl, and you could say that's going to take some of the shine off the organization, and in some ways it has. But in other ways, the Cowboys are as high profile as they've ever been. And I think it's just fun to have them, because even if they're not successful, they're always interesting to me. And they have star power. And that's important for Hard Knocks. So when the show opens, it was something that was a calculated move by Hard Knocks producers. When the cold open of the show is, we're in tight with Dak Prescott, one of the most recognizable figures in pro football, and he's speaking intimately about the struggles of 2020 with the death of his brother and then the horrible injury sustained against the Giants 6 months later, we're off and running. And that was what I took away from the premiere episode, that this is just going to be fun with all these big stars right all the way up to the top, where Jerry Jones, who's going to obviously be a big presence all through the 5 weeks. There wasn't even in episode one, there wasn't the here's the underdog, and that's coming because it always comes in Hard Knocks. Here's the underdog seventh round pick or the street free agent who's trying to make the team. They said, no, this is the Cowboys. This is the star, and that's what we're going to lean on this premiere. And I like that. So that was an initial takeaway I had. Greg, what did you think about the premiere?
Yeah, it was different format. Everyone says it's always like the same thing every year. It really wasn't. It might have been COVID impacted, or they also just sort of made the decision. There's no build up to it. It was just like, let's get on the practice field. There's a lot of news here. Usually there isn't. Number one, Dak Prescott says he had two surgeries, not one, right off the bat. No one knew that. Number two, we see what Jay Glazer had sort of reported about, that it was this, you know, this muscle injury that's more common in baseball, which, by the way, doesn't sound like a good thing. It's like, we're calling the Rangers medical staff because we don't know how to handle this. I thought it was very telling when Troy Aikman said on the Fox broadcast, like, I think it's probably a little more serious than people think, when everyone, you know, working for our company and everywhere else, immediately all they said about Dak's injury is like, oh, it's not a concern at all. Well, you saw what a concern it was, like, to Dak Prescott. And to me, it makes me a little concerned about what's coming up. You saw how important it was to him, to the coaches, to everyone, like, that he's on the field or not. But the fact that, like, him and Zeke are, like, best buddies, and they're like, making a buddy comedy out of it, and the biggest stars are totally fine with the cameras there, and that, you know, that starts with Jerry Jones. I mean, that's going to make it, I think, a more fun
week. Well, how about,
week.
To that point, Mike Third McCarthy show. In one of those coaches' meetings, they have this very, I mean, hard to understand as an outsider, but they have this GPS tracking data. That it's a metric that tracks how much activity a player has in a given practice. And Dak, like, oh, where's Dak at? 576. And McCarthy's like, whoa, that's way too much. And then they reeled him back, put him on a pitch count, and Dak's frustrated. But then, sure enough, he shows up a couple practices later with a bad arm. And Mark, it did and make me think all these things in the edit can make things, A, look like B when that's not necessarily the case. But it did at least insinuate on some level that the Cowboys maybe brought him back too fast initially, and that led to the injury.
Yeah, by their own words, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, I think the thing that is great about this show is even though we have an impression of Dak Prescott, and we kind of know how rough life has been for him over the last 2 years. You mentioned losing his brother and the injury. That I just came away knowing him. I'm feeling like I had a whole different experience with Dak Prescott. I mean, first of all, I wanted to watch the show with my children, but Dak Prescott is a quarterback who drops about 72 F-bombs in this episode.
A lot of F-bombs in Hard Knocks in general.
I mean, Mark McCarthy, too. You gotta
keep
him away.
there was a lot of language, but you know what? Like, I kind of loved him pushing back on not wanting to be put out of practice. Like, just, I think he came across to me as far more determined and fiery than I imagined. I think Zeke Elliott is sort of a wonderful foil for him, because Zeke Elliott, you know, I remember I once talked to his mom about a Mother's Day piece and their relationship, and she sort of said candidly, like, Zeke is a big boy. Like, he, you know, we saw he had never really wrapped a present before, that he's operating in a bit of a different world than other adults too. I thought that was really good. The part that gripped me, and I know, Dan, I think you maybe were not as won over this by this, was John Bones Fassel digging into the process of having a vasectomy and then having it reversed. I don't understand personally why anyone on the planet is having that operation to begin with, but then I want to know why it was reversed. But I thought that, you know, Bones Fassel's a guy that's kind of seems like hired by the studios to show up in Hard Knocks every couple of years and, like, steal the scene. And to me, I loved it. I think the kids...
the players were fascinated by it. They wanted,
I think some were.
Jokes,
I think
they...
some could not figure out what was going on. I mean,
no,
why would,
I
you
didn't,
know?
I mean, I thought it was just striking. All of a sudden, we cut to the scene, and Bones is, like, talking about the surgery on his balls. And he, and right. he's... And he goes into it, and the players, because they're a bunch of 23-year-old dudes, it's the last thing they're ever thinking about is vasectomies. When you get to be our age... You know people that have had the procedure done.
I don't get it at all. But
you might get some actual heat from certain people in your life to undergo such a procedure. That's a decision that people need to make. But after all that, and I thought the players, some players were kind of interested in it and like kind of making sense. Other players are just looking at him like he had a third elbow growing out of his forehead. And I thought that, and then just the bomb at the end, the twist. It's like, oh, yeah, and then, you know, they had to put me under again when they reversed it. And it was like everyone, you know, you think of Michael Scott in The Office, snip, snap, snip, snap. Like, what happened? What's the backstory? I need to know more about
right.
it.
Right, well,
because it was just out of nowhere.
Again. Yeah.
I mean, my guess would be that he wants to have children again. You know, that would be the guess.
I know, but...
Maybe
I mean,
a new situation. Who knows? The coaches, though, like... I don't know. I've had
Greg,
this
very, very somber, and he's like, "Listen, this is what really happened."
I mean, it's you guys aren't
otherwise.
Making it like a big mystery. What's the story? He wants to have
no,
kids.
No, I think he probably was controlled the first time around, and then he retook control.
I think wow. there's more to the story. I would like to know why. That's a big decision to get the surgery and then to reverse it. Is also,
I've sure. always had like an image of Mike McCarthy, and I was pretty hard on him. I think towards the end of the Packers run, just the way he ran the offense and just. Like, is he connecting to to his team? And I don't know, when he started going with the mojo moment and when he started, and the players seemed to like it, but when he started talking about Charlie around and Harry High School, I'm just like, this dude's corny. This dude's so corny.
Let's listen to a little bit of the mojo moment, which is the motivational ploy that he's building into the camp experience.
At whatever point in practice, okay, there's going to be a mojo moment when it's time for additional confidence, charisma, and performance, no matter what the situation. I think I smell a mojo moment coming. It's time for a mojo moment!
That's the announcer.
All
that's
right,
good.
We got mojo moment. Give me the defense on the wall side. Mojo! Mojo! offense over here.
Woo! Mojo moment.
Yeah.
Hey, you look like you fired up for some mojo moment here.
I'll behave.
I'll behave. That was another thing. Like, McCarthy's such a dad move. You know, in 1999, when that Austin Powers sequel was huge, those guys were in diapers, almost everybody right. in that room. And it's like, I don't know if that's the target audience. But I actually liked, he won me back a little bit with Charlie F*** Around and High School Harry. I was kind of into that.
I don't know. I do think, though, Dan, it was a huge victory for you because for the first time ever, I guarantee, on NFL.com, the character Fat Bastard was put into a write-up by yourself, which I thought was marvelous.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm just saying, like, at some level, like, you see him at the beginning, McCarthy, and Jerry Jones is tearing up and talking about coming back to football and what it means to him. And they just sort of show McCarthy next to him, and he seems to be looking over, thinking, like, what the f-?
He looked befuddled to me. That, he was like, he's in this,
he was like, what the hell is happening right now? Right. And it's not like he's running the offense. Kellen Moore's running the offense. And, like, he's coming up with the mojo moment. I just don't know what's happening there.
Mojo moment. Ricky, can you bring up the mojo moment, what it means also? I mean, and coaches do this stuff all the time. I'm curious.
Part was fine. It was more the Charlie. It's like, nothing else matters. We're in this for a championship. Charlie Brown, he's out of the building.
A mojo moment.
Where is he?
A mojo moment, according to Mike McCarthy, and he has all the coaches yelling it also. And that was the PA guy at practice yelling it out too. So this is a major initiative for the Cowboys. This is what it said on the PowerPoint presentation. When it's time for additional confidence, charisma, and performance. This one, I got a little confused. So mojo moment is established initially here that there's a time for a mojo moment. Okay, and it's like when that time hits, it's time for the mojo moment. But then the second part of this, the slate says, no matter the time, the place, the situation, kick in your mojo, yeah, which makes me think that you should be having your mojo at all times.
It feels like wasted energy.
Undercuts what the initial thought, which is when the moment calls for it, that's when you need the mojo. Anybody else have an issue there?
I think number one, I guarantee he's probably run this mojo moment thing. Like six summers in a row in Green Bay back in like the 2008 region. But it feels like he has, you know, there's a certain number of, he maybe went at it from different angles, but on that graphic, he smushed two angles together and they're almost, they clash a little bit. You're constantly in your mojo, but then you need to know when the mojo's
finally
needed, please.
Finally,
I just think of like Kyle Shanahan or Vic Fangio or Bill Belichick watching this and being like, well, we're going to kill them.
Yeah.
But he is also the only coach that ever got Aaron Rodgers over the mountaintop. I don't know. I find him, even though I don't think he's...
I mean, he inherited Aaron Rodgers. And
oh, well, yes, calm down.
He
got to win
the whole
a title.
Time. Aaron Rodgers had no choice.
He was the head coach. But I'm just saying, I think he's an interesting figure to track just because he's been around for so long and you get this. I'm not saying he's the leader of men that you want in 2021, but for the Cowboys, he is right now. Finally, Jerry Jones, Mark, this had to be the low point for you, the episode.
Oh, yeah.
His breakfast, 78 years old. And get a shot of this, Ricky. 78 years old, and Emily was watching it with my wife, and she said, oh, she thinks it's a brioche bun with what looked to be cheese and a sausage. And I said, no, look at the consistency of the bun. I think, first of all, I think it's an egg in there. I think you probably have cheese. You definitely have the sausage patty. And then I think it might be like pancakes. Is this a McGriddle?
It's a McGriddle. And in fact, I thought there was, you could see, I thought McDonald's packaging, but I looked up what is in a McGriddle. And this is from their website. It is griddle cakes. That's the breadish item that
that's
he's touching
pancake,
with his thumb.
Right? Isn't that the same thing?
I think it is like a sweetened pancake. A folded egg, pasteurized processed American cheese, thick-cut applewood smoked bacon. In this case, it could be sausage. Clarified butter. We see him pouring salt on top of it, but just would like to point out to Jerry Jones that it already comes packed with 1,360 milligrams of sodium. So the extra salt... Okay.
He put so much salt on his McGriddle that they actually cut away from it when he was already like deep into the process. We have no idea how much
longer
it went.
They were worried for children that were watching. They were like, this is a bad example.
I'll tell you what, you guys can frown upon it. I actually made me like him more too.
No, I would try that.
He's not eating cantaloupe in the morning. He's 78 years old. He's gone, I'm going to eat a McGriddle.
Well, you guys have been up in Oxnard, right? And that, like, that setup that the Cowboys stay in, to me, is very interesting. I think you do get a reflection of that in training camp. It's not fancy. It's like a huge, you know, the Renaissance brand. Great hotels, but it's pretty much the worst hotels those players are going to stay in all year, for sure. It's a pretty low-key, very chill scenario, and everyone's staying in it. There's no, like, special house. Maybe Jerry Jones has some place on the beach I don't know about, but I'm pretty sure they're all just, like, staying in this little hotel complex. It's not a big deal in the middle of nowhere, and there is something to that I like, that very few NFL teams still keep up with, that like old school 1950s, 60s tradition of, like, we're all going to camp and we're in it together. It's cool they do that.
I love it. They're in their dorm rooms, and I don't know. It just feels like you said, old school. Because as the sports world becomes
they're
more
riding the bikes around and stuff, right, for a couple weeks, it's fun.
Everything is so much more high glossy, and everything else is done at such a high level now that you kind of lose some of that innocence of what the sporting world was like even, right, 25 years ago.
Glossy is not something I would attach to the Dallas Cowboys on any level, so bullseye.
I mean, there were moments it felt like a bit of a, like, I could almost feel Wes shuddering. He would not have liked, it felt like it was like a PR video for the 2021 Cowboys. There was a little bit of that, but
and John Gonzalez tweeted this, and this is a part of Hard Knocks as well. You come out of these episodes, you're like, oh man, this team looks pretty good.
they do have a ton of talent. I mean, they are a fascinating team.
Is this team gonna lose? I don't know.
I'm worried about Dak. I'm a little more worried, I think, than most.
Yeah, he's throwing lightly now, by the way. But that will be, you know, sometimes these things dovetail together nicely when Hard Knocks syncs up with an actual big NFL story. A couple of years ago with Antonio Brown, that comes to mind, his contentious hold out with the Raiders and the foot issues he had after going in the cryogenic chamber. What is that? Guy was nuts. But we're going to get good coverage of the Dak thing that otherwise they would be able to shield in secrecy. So there you go. This is my 10th season, by the way, at NFL.com writing these recaps. I started 2012 with the Dolphins and have done it every year since. I've only missed two episodes when Harrison was born and when Jack was born in 2014, and Greg, you had jumped in for those two apps. Otherwise, every recap, every year. The sands, man. The sands through the hourglass.
I mean, but conversely, when Greg leaves the set to go pick up a child, he's lambasted by you and myself.
Well, the birth of a child, I mean, got to be there with the wife in the hospital.
I mean, I think we should all be flexible, you know, with things. We started the show a little late because the lawnmower is making a lot of noise. It's like we're beginning, end of the show, changing times. What's the difference?
There was no lawnmower.
Or something like that. I don't remember.
There's no lawnmower. We have a slide at Hansus Manor, a pool slide. It had to be sanded down.
Okay. Very loud process.
Very loud process.
Yeah.
A very expensive process, by the way. This home ownership thing, you got to watch out.
And but you mentioned you had a pool man sanding the slide, but he also brought a pool boy with him. Very intriguing.
Whatever happened to Gary Cooper?
A pool man and a pool boy, yes. And I'll send them your way next, Mark.
There won't be anything for them to do at my place.
I don't know what you need them for.
Oh, we'll put them to work.
This is getting weird.
All right, good stuff. Hey, NFL Network program is back Friday.
Thursday.
Great.
Hey, we got a great time. We're right before Washington Patriots, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's as good on a Thursday. That's as good a time as we've ever had. So people should watch it.
That's great. So we're the lead in to the preseason action. That's good. That's a good time slot. Please check that out. We are very excited about things that are happening over on the network side. And we will be back with this program on Monday. Barring any type of crazy news, you won't hear from us on the podcast again until Monday. But thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Cam Wolf. And we will be back on Monday. Until then, heed the call. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having seven kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.